Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is Rabbi Levi Avtzon of Linksfield Shul. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you on this day. Here we are on Tuesday, the 17th of June, and the 21st of Sivan. And we're living through unbelievable times, right? We're living through incredible. Who would ever imagine incredible times, miraculous times, challenging times, all that? And what I hope that we can do over the next few minutes on the Verbringen is try to unpack a bit from a spiritual sense, and inspire. I think when we're bombarded with news the way we are today, we only feel as good as the last piece of information we read. So if we read victory, then we're a bit uplifted. If we read about a tragedy, we're down. And while it's totally understandable and maybe even laudable, it's dangerous because it doesn't allow us to have big perspective. If our mood is only as good as the most recent piece of news we read, then we don't actually have perspective, and it's very hard to have gratitude. It's very hard to feel uplifted, right? The famous expression that says a parent is only as happy as the most unhappy kid. And if you have more than one kid, then chances are you're always unhappy in that perspective, because if you're only as unhappy as the most recent interaction or negative challenge that your kid went through, you have a few kids, and life is full of challenges. Basically, you're never happy, which is not a way to live. I often joke that in shul business, a rabbi's relationship with a member is often only as good as the last interaction. You could have had 10 years of incredible interactions and deep relationship, but one negative interaction or one misunderstanding, and then 10 years could be wiped away in 1 second. Not by everybody, but quite a few. And it's actually it's probably the most frustrating part of shul business, of pastoral work, is that you're only as good as your last interaction with somebody. And that human capital from the past doesn't mean much in people's perspective. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about that when we follow the news and when we try to gain perspective on life and where we're at, if we're only going to be as happy and only going to feel based on the last piece of information, we will never be able to stand above it, because the news cycle will own us and a little challenge will totally throw us out. So for example, yes, there's been loss of life in the last few days in Israel, which is devastating. But if that in any way can diminish the incredible miracles of our time and the miracles of what's happened in Iran and the miracles of what's happening in Israel and how many lives are being saved, I think that's not a healthy perspective to have. As adults, we're able to hold, I don't like the word compartmentalize, but to create spaces for multiple ideas at the same time. In other words, it's an amazing time and it's a challenging time, right? The Six-Day War was an incredible miracle, and yet hundreds of people lost their life. And one doesn't remove the other. You can hold multiple truths at the same time. And the truth is that every life lost is terrible. On the other hand, hold the truth that we're living in unbelievable, miraculous times, and the way that the Middle East has shifted in the last 20 months is nothing less than biblical. And yes, we mourn the thousands of lives lost, and we can hold that together. And if I'm unable to hold that together and I'm only just devastated for the loss, and as long as not every hostage is home, I cannot celebrate anything, then I think we're living a life of lack of clarity and a lack of gratitude. Because often I think our relationship to Hashem in some ways can be compared to a parent, right? We refer to God as Avinu, as our father. And we have other relationship dynamics with Hashem as well. We refer to him as our spouse, our sibling, our master, our king, and many, many other references. And each one refers to a different dynamic of the relationship. But for a moment, let's just explore that dynamic of a parent and child. Many of the listeners are parents or are adults and have children, whether it's their own children or nephews, nieces, students, etc. And you know that when a child is always unhappy, no matter what you give them, it's very hard to give more. In other words, if all they're telling you is what they don't give, if they're, all they're reminding you is, but I don't have a brand new iPhone 16. I know all my friends have it, and all my friends are wearing those kind of sneakers, and all my friends, right? Nothing triggers me as a parent that when my kid comes to me and says, all my friends, oh God. It's very hard to give to somebody that never says thank you. But what about the shoes? You're right. But what about everything else? What about the food on your table? What about the bed that you sleep in? What about the holidays? What about the love? What about the marriage that your parents have that hopefully is blessed? What about? There's a million stuff. But if all I can focus is on the imperfections, then while it sounds noble and moral and caring, it could come across as deeply insensitive and deeply ungrateful. When I show up to Hashem and all I'm saying is, but what about the hostages? Yes, I could pray for the hostages, but at the same time, I could sit there saying, thank you, Hashem. Wow. The Iranian regime, which has been the biggest threat against the land of Israel from the outside, obviously unity and other stuff are always the threat from the inside, but the biggest threat from the outside was the Iranian nuclear and ballistic missile threat and all their proxies. And look what's happening. Yes, it's not over, but we are in a place that 2 years ago would have felt straight out of science fiction. And here we are, in just 4 days after the war began in Iran. What's going on? Basically, Israel has, a free corridor. They're doing whatever they want in Iran. They're flying the skies as if they own them. And the whole top military brass gone. And a lot of the nuclear capabilities are out. And the nuclear scientists, and on and on. And I don't claim to be a political commentator, but you don't have to read a lot of news to know that what's going on is unbelievable. And yes, there's missiles in Israel. And yes, there was lives lost. And yes, there's innocent people that die. And yes, and yes, and yes. And you can hold that and honor that without losing the bigger picture. Right? And I think many of us struggle with big picture thinking, because the small picture is what matters, and it does, right? Each life lost is huge. But if each life lost destroys me and I'm unable to feel uplifted by the miracles, then that's when I feel like we've gone too far, right? America won World War II, right, together with the Allies and the Russians, etc., and a lot of lives were lost, but the fact is they won. And if all we're going to focus on is each life lost, each innocent life lost on the thing, and then we forget the bigger picture, and that is a war was won. And especially in this scenario where the numbers are infinitely less than even the most optimistic person believed would be possible if you went to declare a war on a sovereign country like Iran, I think we need gratitude. I really think that one of the greatest feeling that we have to feel right now, while holding the pain of October 7th, while holding the pain of over 50 hostages still, while holding the pain of innocent life, while holding the pain of many lives wrecked, while holding all that, to still sit there saying, wow, what a victory of good over evil. What a victory of goodness. How grateful we are that Hashem has given the side of goodness the ability to win so dramatically. And to remind the world that evil doesn't have to win, because the last 10 years, it's felt like the West and the morals, the Jewish morals, were slowly losing. And basically, everyone outside of that world, outside of the West, seemed to be empowered. And the West lost its way and was arguing over rubbish and self-destructing. And we forgot how to win. And we forgot what we're fighting for. That's why we forgot how to win. And Israel, as Douglas Murray always talks about, Israel's reminding the West what their why is. And it's reminding them that they could win. and we are seeing incredible winning. And it's not only about a missile or a rocket or a general. It's about suddenly reminding the world that evil doesn't have to win. We don't have to just give up and let the crazies and the nihilists and the destructive and the jihadis take over this world. No. We have a lot of fight within us, and we will be victorious. The way of ethics and morals and the Noahide laws and decency and the morals that we brought down from Sinai, and we just commemorated a few weeks ago on Shavuot, the Ten Commandments, those morals will be victorious. Not only in the battlefield, but in the world of ideas, we can win. And we can reach a day where, as the song I'm about to share, it literally just came out yesterday. I love sharing with you new music that just comes out. But the song kind of brings out the famous verse that we say in a lot of prayers, Ki beiti beit tefillah yikarei l'chol ha'amim, that one day God's home will be a home for everybody. So this is House of Prayer on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul, and here we are celebrating and commemorating and trying to give context and trying to give hopefully some upliftment based on what's going on, to really feel the moment. You know, sometimes you have to really stretch yourself to find a connection between what's going on in the world and the Parsha of the week. And I know I'm not a Parsha show. Rabbi Lipsker has an incredible Parsha show. But I do think it's worth exploring just a few ideas of this week's Torah portion as they connect to what's going on today. Fundamentally, the big theme of this week's Torah portion is about a year after the Jewish people left Egypt. They're in the desert, and it comes time for them to go into the land of Israel. At least that's what the plan was. They would go and check out the land, and Moshe sends spies, right? The parsha is the name Shlach, send spies. And Moshe basically sent scouts to check out the land and come and report back on the land. And they spend 40 days in the land, and they really get a good view of what's going on. And then they come back and give a report to the Jewish people. And the report goes terribly south because many of the spies, 10 of the 12 spies, came back and with a very negative attitude. And according to the commentaries, they never even had a good attitude in the beginning. Their plan was never to come back with a good report. Their intention was, from the moment they went onto their mission, their intention was to show up, highlight the negative, and then figure out how to frame it to the Jewish people when they get back and basically convince everybody not to go into the land. Two of the 12 spies, because each tribe had one spy, so 12 tribes, two of them, Kalev and Yehoshua, they don't go together with the other 10. In other words, they have their own opinion. They understand that what's about to happen if they go into the land is miraculous and amazing, etc., and that God will be on their side. But the other 10 totally overpower them with persuasive arguments and obviously, you know, resonated with fears that people have, right? Any politician knows that all you have to do is trigger people's fears. Oh my gosh, the people are coming. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. And suddenly you get people to buy into everything, right? Every dictator and every politician on the planet knows I have to work on your fears and convince you that the world is coming to an end. That's my job. If this politician stays, the world will come to an end. If I come in, your life will be literally a life of paradise you cannot imagine. And when you create that kind of contrast and people believe you, wow, they're going to vote for you because nobody wants the worst to happen. So the 10 spies managed to convince the people. And eventually the Jewish people, on the most part, believe the 10 spies. They kind of renege on their plan to travel to Israel. They start screaming on Moshe and Aaron and God. How could you even want to take us to Israel? This whole reason you took us out of Egypt is to do a genocide for us in Israel, etc., blah, blah, blah. And this time God has enough and decrees that all the adult male population will not make it into the land, and they'll end up spending another 39 years in the desert. And then only after 40 years in the desert in total will they able to enter the land. And eventually they enter the land 40 years after the Exodus, literally 40 years minus 5 days. And they enter the land of Israel with Moshe's successor, Joshua. Okay, great. But I think there's a few points that they, some of the psychology the spies used on the Jewish people to convince them not to go into the land have a deep resonance in psychology and are worthy of exploring, especially in what's been going on the last few years, the last 20 months, but even before that. At some stage, when the spies are presenting their case, why going to Israel for the Jewish people would be an absolute own goal and a disaster, they say that when we were in Israel, we met giants, huge people, people who were literally massive. As Rashi says, literally, they it looks like they block the sun with their height, or that the sun is like a necklace around their neck. That's how tall they seem. And people, they say, that looked at us, we could hear them talking to each other, and they're like, why do we see a bunch of grasshoppers on the ground who look like humans? That's how little we look to them. One of the expressions that they use is Vanihi Beinehem Beinenu Kechagavim. We felt, standing next to these giants, we felt in our eyes, in other words, we had the perception of ourselves of being as grasshoppers compared to them. V'chein hayinu be'enehem. And that's exactly how they considered us. We considered ourselves grasshoppers, and therefore they considered us like grasshoppers. Now, therefore they considered us like grasshoppers. That word, that's not the literal translation. The literal translation is we were in our eyes as grasshoppers, and so we were in their eyes. But the great Jewish thinkers saw an association between the first statement and the second statement. If I consider myself a grasshopper, then other people will consider me a grasshopper as well. In other words, if I see myself small, then everyone sees me small. Or at least I perceive that they see me small. Right? When you walk into a room and you're feeling very insecure because you don't know anybody and you're convinced everyone's looking at you or nobody likes you, etc. We are the kings and queens of creating self-destructive narratives about who we are and our role in this world, which absolutely never leads to contentment and never leads to promise and never leads to encouragement. One of the hardest things to liberate ourselves as individuals and as a nation is the confidence to stop seeing ourselves as grasshoppers, right? The name of this war against Iran is Am Kelavi, a nation like a lion. It's a beautiful verse from the Torah. Those words come where the famous non-Jewish prophet Bilam, who was an anti-Semite, but he was forced to say nice things about the Jewish people, says that the Jewish people are like a lion that rises, Am Kelavi, like a little cub, like a lion that literally wakes up in the morning, arises to really, roar and be the kings and take over the space. Am Kelavi. It's a big difference between seeing yourself as a lion and seeing yourself as a grasshopper. And one of the big ways that you can tell when a Jew sees himself as a lion or as a grasshopper is when they care more about being liked by others than by living true to their own values. There's nothing more annoying than hearing a Jew say, but we want Europe to like us. But the French president is criticizing us. And what about the English prime minister? Oh, and what about them? And what about them? And shouldn't we want to be liked? Really? Really? Has Jewish history taught us anything? I don't need to be liked. I don't need to be loved. I do want to be respected, and ideally, even feared. The Jewish people, I want to be seen as a lion. I'd rather be respected than loved. See, often we want the world's pity, right? We often, when it comes to Holocaust Memorials Day, we'll bring politicians over who will sit there giving us their patronizing promises of never again, etc., and like shame, and like, oh gosh, so done with that. The world's pity means nothing. Right? like after October 7th, so many of us were getting irritated, but why is nobody condemning Hamas? And whatever. Those who have ethics and morals obviously did condemn Hamas. And those who don't, please don't give me some patronizing, politically correct condemnation of Hamas. No, thank you. We're good. We're good. That rush to get the world sympathy. Obviously, we need to do hasbara, which is explain our position, etc. But not to the desperation that many of us feel. How am I going to get the world on my side? And why does nobody see my point of view? Because there'll always be anti-Semites, and there'll always be small-minded idiots, and there'll always be people who think that weak is good and strong is bad, and many other foolish current narratives out there, and the people that just don't have clarity. But there's enough good people out there who have clarity. But that's, I'm not here for the world's sympathy, right? When the spies are saying, we were like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and therefore we were in their eyes. If I see myself as a grasshopper, then they will see me as a grasshopper. I don't need the world to like me. And there is nothing more arrogant than when the world, whichever world, the Western world, the Eastern world, coming and preaching to the Jewish people about ethics and morals. Oh, wow. Wow. You know, there's a certain level of chutzpah that is just beyond comprehension. When nations who literally don't know the difference between good and bad, and if you literally gave them light and dark in front of their face, they wouldn't have a clue to differentiate. And chances are they'll always go to the dark. People who literally would not care if Auschwitz happened today, heaven forbid, coming and telling the Jewish state what, how to live ethically, how to live morally. Oh, lovely. So rich. Not only when it comes from our government here, when it comes from anywhere. Preaching to the Jewish people about morality is one of the richest things ever. It takes such incredible stupidity and chutzpah to do so. Really? The nation of the Ten Commandments, the nation that's endured and survived everything, the nation that taught ethics and morals, and that every decent ethic out there in the world that we live today can trace itself back to the original Judaic code, to the 613 commandments, to the Tanakh, to Abraham, to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. You're coming and giving me lectures about morality and proportionality and how to fight wars. Of course, the world's going to tell us how to fight wars. Basically, don't win. Right? Nobody likes winning today. It's lovely. It's lovely to see. Nobody knows how to win. And when the Jewish people are finally determined to win, and I really hope they go all the way, suddenly the world's coming and preaching to us about proportionality. And the best thing to do is negotiations. Oh, negotiations. I love that word. Oh, yeah, you can negotiate when two good people are having conflict. Great. Negotiations. Negotiations in marriage, negotiations between siblings, negotiation between democracies, between two countries of goodwill, 100%. But when good fights evil, there's no room for negotiation. You don't negotiate with Hitler. You don't negotiate with Khomeini. You don't negotiate with Hamas. You don't negotiate with somebody who does not share a basic moral code like you, because you are coming and literally confronting the epitome of goodness and evil. And in a world that doesn't know how to name evil, because nobody likes that, so politically incorrect. What do you mean? Israel's also done mistakes. Like every little mistake you make suddenly creates an immoral equivalency, right? Well, one side made 5 mistakes. The other side made 90 mistakes. It's only a quantifiable difference. Fundamentally, it's not that different. I mean, Hamas just makes more mistakes. Wow. It sounds so convincing to some people, but such stupidity. Just because you find a Nazi that did something right doesn't make the Nazis good. And just because you find an allies soldier who did something wrong doesn't make them allies evil. That's why the big narrative is always important to understand what's the intention, what's the goal. Yes, humans are humans, and there'll be always be mistakes. But we're not here to sit there analyzing who's right and wrong based on the micro, but on the macro, and then the big picture, and then the goal, and the purpose, and the intention, and the dream, and the underlying ethics that underlies both sides. And anyone with half a brain can see the contrast. And if they can't, they're not worth my attention. And they're definitely not worth me chasing them. Please, won't you give a condemnation? They're condemning themselves. They're outing themselves as moral, useful idiots. So no, thank you. I don't need the world to like us. I'm not a grasshopper. And because I'm not a grasshopper, I don't care how they see me. I don't want to be liked, but I want to be respected, and I want to be safe. And being safe is much more important than people standing by my grave and saying never again. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson, and it's a privilege and an honor to be here with you today. And we're talking about making sure that we don't see ourselves as grasshoppers. We're living in historical times. We're living in incredible times. We're living in big times. And we're living in times that the only thing that's holding us back is a narrative of ourself. To truly liberate ourselves, to really be a person that has Gaon Yaakov, pride in who we are, right? A Jew that's truly a person of faith, a person of bitachon and Hashem. When we realize that we're on Hashem's side and Hashem's protecting us. That last week's Torah portion was that one of the things that said is, we ask Hashem, we say this every time when we open the ark, when the ark would travel, Moshe would say, Kuma Hashem, Hashem, show up. May your enemies run away, spread out, and all those who hate you disperse. It doesn't say those who hate the Jewish people. It says those who hate you, God. And Rashi says, if they hate the Jews, then they hate God. Misanecha, someone hates the Jewish people, they hate God. Right? Hitler was very articulate in explaining that if he kills the Jew, he kills morality, he kills ethics, he kills the God of conscience. They weren't fighting only about us. They were fighting against Hashem. Throughout history, the anti-Semites, the ones who went all out, they understood they weren't just fighting against the Jew. They were fighting against what the Jew represents, fighting against the creator of heaven and earth. So we have Hashem on our side. And therefore, we don't fear. There's a beautiful prayer. It bothers me that many shuls don't actually say it. It's in every siddur after Aleinu. Final prayer, we say that every three times a day, Shacharis Mincha Maariv, and we say, Al tira mipachat pisaim, don't be afraid of a fear that will come to you, and anything that could come against you. Al tira, don't be afraid. Kim al utsu etzu asufar, they could come up with great schemes against us, but it will all be turned upside down. Ki imanu kel, because God is with us. Al tira, do not be afraid. Do not be anxious, do not be stressed. Yes, we can mourn and grieve the lives lost, but we cannot walk around in a black hole, in this attitude that cannot see the miracles. I mean, look what's happened around the world. Look at the shifts. Yes, the world is still pretty messy, but it is much less messy than it was a few years ago. Much less. There's a lot more clarity out there. A lot of the rubbish is slowly being negated. And this is not about specific politicians. It's about narratives out there that slowly the world is coming to its senses. It seems that we've maybe hit rock bottom and now we're slowly starting to go back up with some sense of moral clarity, with a world that at least good people know what they stand for and what they believe in. They believe in and what's worth fighting for, right? Israel's reminding the people, the good people of the world, that the fight ain't over, hasn't even begun. And the war is not only a war of tanks and missiles and scuds and planes. Mm-mm. The most important war is the war of ideas and the war of behaviors. We live in a world that has so many silly, stupid, destructive ideas on the macro level and the micro level, ideas that are destroying societies and ideas that are destroying individuals, ideas of entitlement, ideas that if you're weak, that means you're good, ideas that as long as you show up, that's all that matters, but you don't actually have to try, ideas of disempowerment, ideas that a tough marriage is not worth fighting for, not fighting with, fighting for. So many ideas out there that are destroying societies and in the macro and the micro. And finally, we could come and sit there saying, we have ideas, we have behaviors, we have a tradition. The Jewish people come with a tradition of thousands of years and has so much to teach the world. But the truth is, my dear friends, as I'm talking to a crowd that's at least a large part Jewish, it's ideas to teach us. How much do we know about our ethics and morals? Yes, a lot of us know about our customs and our traditions, which are extremely important, and what a Shabbos meal looks like and what a Pesach looks like. But do we understand our story? Do we understand our values? Have we opened up and gone through the Tanakh, the Bible? Have we gone through some of the Talmud? Have we gone through some of Jewish mysticism? Have we gone through some of Jewish ethics? Do we know our story? Because I have no doubt that the world's going to come after this. After this war, please God, ends with total victory. The world's going to suddenly look up to the Jewish people and earn a respect that we've lost in our own eyes and maybe in the eyes of the world for a long time. And I could see this coming, and I believe it will come. That's why I played the song earlier. All the nations will come, and that's the Jewish people to teach us. What's your secret? And here's my final message. I need a note. I need to have an answer, not only for the world, but for my kids. Not only for my kids, but for my own challenges. I need to have the answer. I need to know my Judaism. So you know what the best response to our time is? Pray deeper. Learn deeper. Get to know who you are. This is a time of stark identity. The lines have been drawn between good and evil. And we know which side we're on, but many of us don't understand why we're on that side. And what does that side stand for? And what era in history are we living? In other words, what are the consequences? What's the bigger picture? What's the macro story of where we came from and where we're going? And I can't promise you where we're going, although I know the end is one of, please God, messianic redemption world, but I don't know when he's coming. I hope, I pray he comes today. But I know this, that if I want him to come and if I want us to reach a world of true peace, a big way to do that is when many of us, all of us, every one of us, reclaims our identity, reclaims the answer to the question that I have no doubt will be asked of every single one of us, by ourselves and by our neighbors over the coming weeks and months and years ahead. Hey, Jew, what do you stand for? And I hope, I really hope, we can have an answer. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul. God bless you. Have a great week. We finish off with some music because, again, everything is about the music. And the final music of today is Thank You, Hashem, on 101.9 Chai FM.